to Monster Mania Radio. My name is Rob Dimension, and I am joined by possibly the biggest Twilight fan that I know.
And if you believe that, we got a bridge to sell you.
The creator of Monster Mania Con, it is his brainchild, and this is the podcast that brings you all the news, and we try to entertain you, I guess.
And a little bit more. So how was, where's the good and plenty? I thought this was going to become like a regular
weekly thing. Jackpot. My question is, where is the remnants of what was left? Is there anything left? Or did you eat it all?
The sugar babies are left still, and the cigars are left, only because I had the root canal, and
everything else is gone?
Yeah. Dude, the chuckles were gone by the time you got down to the corner here. I told you they'd be gone
funny.
And I'm not kidding. But I got your Christmas present already.
No, you did not. Really?
Yes, I did.
Oh, all right.
You'll
good.
See.
I haven't gotten yours yet.
I'm just saying my autograph went over. I spent $300 on you, so you
know, you did not.
Not that you have to do equal, but $298 would be good.
Maybe I'll give you the PS3. I'm going to give my kid instead.
No, I got one already.
So I wanted to update everyone. Last week I talked about the Michael Myers mask from Trick or Treat Studios that I had gotten. So I took your advice and I emailed them and said, I sent them the picture that I put up on the website.
With the dog nose.
And I said, hey, you know, I recently purchased your mask and I'm curious if I got a bad one or if the shading is typically this dark. Any help would be great.
And I'm sure they immediately wrote back. Did you send them the picture?
I did, yes.
I mean, that picture clearly shows he has a gray nose and gray lips.
Yes.
The lips, you know, I could live with. The nose, like I said before, it's downright laughable.
When I put this picture, because I also shared it on Facebook and Twitter, a lot of people actually commented about how bad it was.
Yeah, oh, obviously. They're just being honest.
Yeah.
And I would think that if I'm the company that is marketing a Michael Myers mask and someone sends me a picture of a mask that has the dog nose on it, I mean, really, that's what it looks like. I would assume they would write you back and say, oops, you know, sorry, you must have got a badly painted one. Return it and we'll give you a new one, right?
No, it didn't happen. So the response that I got was, and I'm reading this directly, is, looks correct. You can always get some gray-white paint and mix a little gray and dab it on the areas you think are too dark.
Exactly. See, that's when I go to a restaurant and if I order like a medium well steak, and if it comes out and it's really, really red in the middle, I can always just take it home and microwave it and make it darker.
You could.
You know what I mean?
So let me ask you a question.
So have you replied to that email?
No, but I want to ask you a question. Should I have dropped our names or the podcast and said, hey, you know, we reviewed it on this thing and, you know, the response has been pretty negative? What are your thoughts? Like, I wanted to, like, I almost kind of wanted to bring their opinion of because I know that, first of all, they're going to say, well, we sold a ton of masks. That's going to be the response because ideally their job is to sell a ton of masks.
Well, yeah.
You have the license.
But ideally their job is to make their customers happy so that the customer comes back again when they have the next mask or whatever it is that they want to sell.
As of right now, I don't think I would buy from them again.
I wouldn't.
To be honest.
It's almost bordering on false advertising because the photo that they're showing is the photo of the mask in shadow. It's misleading you to when you open up the package and you get that. I mean, that's not a Michael Myers mask. That's a Michael Myers with a screwed up nose mask.
Yeah.
And there's a difference. You didn't order a Michael Myers with a screwed up nose mask.
Right.
You ordered a replica of Michael Myers' mask in the movie.
And
I can guarantee if you showed that to John Carpenter, he's going to say, no, we didn't have our nose painted gray.
I'm sure he's not. But if you look at the picture, if you look really close, you can actually see that there is some shadowing on the nose. But it's so dark, you really can't see it. So do you know what I'm saying? Like it's there, but it's. I agree with you that it's borderline false, but it is there. And they could say, well, if you look at our picture, the shadowing is there.
Yeah, but no one looking at that photo, and the photo that's, you know, attached to the mask, looking at that photo, you're thinking you're seeing shadow. And, I mean, clearly the photo on the mask does not look like the photo that you have on your phone there.
I'm a big Michael Myers fan.
I am too.
I know that his nose was not painted like that.
Yeah. You know, and I thought the mold looked great.
It looks great.
But, I mean, to tell you, if you don't like it, to just go out and get your own paint and fix it yourself, that's like buying a new car and the wheel falls off when you're driving it home and having them telling you, here's a, go to the store and get a couple nuts and put the wheel back on. That's not, it's not good customer service, A. B, it's borderline false advertising or I don't know if false advertising is the right word, but, I mean, that's not what...
Misrepresentation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do agree. So,
and the least they could have done, I think, would be to say to you, I mean, honestly, do they all look like that then?
I don't know.
I've heard from other people that the gray is not as pronounced as it is there, that it's more subtle on the mask from the same company.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, to me, it just sounds like the luck of the draw on, you know, which artisan you got that painted your mask.
And to be honest with you, like, even shadowing would just be on the bottom of the nose. Like, that really is up over the ball of the top.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I don't know. You can always go to monstermaniaradio.net, and there is a picture that's there that has a comparison for the sales pitched picture.
The advertising photo and the real life photo.
Right. So,
what are you going to do?
I'm probably just going to take it. What am I going to do? I really like the mold, and to be totally honest with you, I bought it from a smaller business. I went through a smaller business to get it because I was trying to give that smaller business,
business.
And I feel bad because I it's not their fault. So I don't know. It's kind of like one of those middle things where
I would consider sending it back to the company. You know, I mean, not the company that you bought it from so much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I told you in the very beginning when you sent me, I think you emailed me or texted me.
Yeah, I texted you a picture, yeah.
As soon as I saw it, I'm like, dude, friggin' return.
Yeah, you were like, laughed. You were like, what is that?
It's a joke. Yeah. If he was coming at you with a knife, he'd be laughing at him. You'd expect the knife to bend and the water to shoot out of a flower, I could throw
it and he'd go after it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you ought to have a flea collar. It's crazy, man. Me personally, I think I get what you're saying about the small businessman that was the person that made the sale to you. I totally respect that. I used to sell collectibles online before we even started doing the conventions, and I know what a hassle that is. But what's right is right. And that, you know, the company that made the mask misrepresented it in the photos. Somebody in Mexico made a mistake painting the mask. They need to own up to it, make good on it. And they should have, when they got the first batch of masks in and they saw they had a spot nose, they should have packed them up and sent them back and said, hey guys, you didn't paint this right.
Uh-huh.
You know, they should have bit the bullet and back then instead of trying to push that mask on other people. And then when you email them and say, hey, you know, is this right? Doesn't look right. And they tell you, go buy your own paint. I mean, that's just the epitome of they're not owning up to their own mistake and acting like it's not even a mistake. Of course it's a mistake. He's got a dog nose.
Yeah.
You know? If it was a cartoon or something, I could see. But it's ridiculous that they would try to get away with that.
Yeah. Well, that's the quandary.
I'd send it back, man. You come to the show, you'll get a Michael Myers mask for a little bit more money.
Yeah.
But by the time you get done
painting it, I'll be $100 in.
Yeah. So go to the show and you know, give it to another small businessman and made his own mask. And
yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean?
Speaking of the show, I wanted to... People are always wanting to know more about the show and how they can... First of all, it happens a lot where you're always open to suggestions for guests.
Absolutely. And it's the God's honest truth. When we go to pick stars for a show, first place I go to is the Monster Mania Con forums on the webpage. And I go and I read the guest suggestions there, along with, you know, individual. We have a link on the website that you can click on that says for guest suggestions. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, every day I get them, every day I read them.
Okay, so I'm sure you've gotten from the really good to the really bad. An entire spectrum. What is the best way to approach you as far as etiquette for you to take the recommendation seriously?
It has to be a real recommendation, number one. The easiest way to do it, the right way to do it, is to click on the link on the webpage where it says if you have a guest suggestion, click here. To click there, send me an email. I honestly do read them. Be realistic about it. Johnny Depp is not going to do the show, I'm sorry to say. And I get the people that don't... There's different people that come to the convention. There's convention...
Professionals,
I guess. Yeah. Yeah, you could say that know what it's all about and come to our show constantly and other shows. There are other people that are coming to a show for the first time and, you know, they want to see Johnny Depp and they don't understand the difference of why, you know, one guest will do a show and another one not.
Right.
And believe me, if I could have Johnny Depp at a show, you know, I'd certainly be happy to do that.
He'd be a mainstay.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, to answer your question, the correct way... most appreciated way would be to click the link on the website, send me an email, tell me who you want, be realistic about it. I mean, like I said, Johnny Depp's not going to do it. A lot of times, the way not to do it is when I make a guest announcement on a Facebook page or on the convention, that I look at it as that guest announcement is for that guest. Mm-hmm. Like, and it never fails that when I announce that we have somebody from Nightmare on Elm Street coming, somewhere in the body or the comments that follow that will be bring Robert Englund or something like that. And it to me, it's kind of off-putting or disrespectful maybe, mm-hmm, to the person that we're announcing, because, I mean, that announcement is meant to credit that person that's coming. Many, many, many times, the person that we're announcing goes onto our Facebook page or goes onto our forums or the Twitter or whatever it may be where we announce the guests, and they look to see what the fan reaction is. And it's got to be disheartening to find, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 additional guest requests in the comments that are made, you know, in the comments that are made after in the same thread that we're announcing a guest in. I mean, so that's not the way to do it, number one. Another way not to do it is a lot of times there'll be some really unusual guest request, maybe, or a guest that is not typically requested for the show, and I'll get, in the course of a day or two, I'll get somewhere between 6 and 8 emails requesting that guest.
So basically, they've put it over online.
Exactly. Somebody
email the promoter to get me on the show,
right,
and they have to listen.
Right.
Unfortunately, it kind of works the opposite, do you think?
To a degree. I mean, I won't say in every case, but I mean, if that's the case, if it's a fan doing it, that's one thing. If it's the writer or the star or whoever it is that's trying to get onto the show, the best way for them to do it is just send me an email themselves and, mm-hmm, be honest and say, you know, hey, this is, you know, so-and-so, I wrote the screenplay for this movie, or I did this or I did that, you know, I'd like to be a guest at your show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's the best way, and it's the most honest way to do, mm-hmm, it. You know, it's the more professional way to do it. You know, having 6 or 8 of your fans or friends email me, I mean, as soon as I get the third one in the same day about this particular person that's not like a Robert Englund or, right, you know, a person that would be regularly requested, I know what's up. Mm-hmm. I mean, getting 8 of your friends to request you to come to the show does not make me think, oh my God, I got to have this person. Who is,
right,
it? I don't,
right,
recognize the name, but who is this? I have to have them. It doesn't work that way. I mean, I know what it's about. So, I mean, that's the proper way, the most effective way to do it.
Oh, that's a good response. I wanted to ask you this too. Twilight releases this weekend. I know most horror fans are not a fan of that series. Would you think about bringing in a Twilight star or a Vampire Diary star, shows that are aimed maybe within the genre but outside the genre, if you know what I mean? Like, they're less horror genre than...
More pop culture.
Yes. Would a guest like that be welcomed? What do you think the response would be from the normal con goer? And do you think it would bring in business for yourself that you typically wouldn't see?
So I've never I've never, ever watched Twilight. Actually, last night I saw the last 5 minutes of one of the Twilight movies because I was tuning in for American Horror Story, and I tuned in like 5 minutes early, and the end of one of the Twilights was on there. I don't even know, honest to God, I don't even know the characters' names or the actors' names that are in it. I just don't follow it. The one girl looked like the girl that was, I know she, it was the girl that was in the Red Riding Hood movie, Red Riding Hood and the Huntsman or something like that. And she had the affair with the director and split up with the guy that apparently is really her boyfriend in the Twilight series, but I don't know his name. I don't watch it. As far as it, would I have a guest from the films at the show? I compare that to Buffy, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And for the longest time, I didn't bring in Buffy guests. I thought it was not what the typical Monster Mania fan was looking for. But we had, from Buffy, we had James Marsters. And a lot of the staff themselves, who were diehard horror fans, were really into, you know, him coming. So, I mean, I'm not ever going to say never. We've had some Vampire Diary people, actually. I've never watched that show either, but I think that's probably one step closer to the typical Monster Mania guest than a Twilight guest would be. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would never rule anything out, but, you know, I can tell you that in March you're not going to see any Twilight guests that, you know. Vampire Diaries, I don't know. I don't know enough about it. I don't watch it. I don't watch much regular television. I mean, other than American Horror Story and Walking Dead, it's sports and movies. You know, yeah. I really don't watch sitcoms. I don't watch dramas. I just don't watch much regular television.
Did you get Bernie Perrant's new book?
Not yet, but I'm going to.
He was just doing a book signing. I actually figured that you would go. It was not. He was in the area yesterday. I don't know. Big Bernie Perrant fan?
Oh,
no, that's
yeah.
not horror, but still.
Actually, real quick story. When I was a kid, I used to stay on a friend of mine had a lot more money than I did, and they had a yacht down Wildwood. And the year that the Flyers won the Cup, Bernie Perrant had a boat around the slip from where my friend's boat was. So we went and met him, and he could barely speak any English and signed an autograph for me. I was like, I don't know, maybe 16 or 17. And then I took my son down to a Wildwood convention appearance that Bernie was at, and I was talking to Bernie. I said, oh, you know, you signed an autograph for me. I said, your English is a whole lot better now than it used to be.
Yeah.
Super nice guy. I mean, I saw Rob Zombie said he's reading his
I did. I actually saw that too, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's good. I mean, I know Rob Zombie's making the Broad Street Bullies. I'm afraid of what it's going to do to, you know, the history of the Broad Street Bullies. But, you know, I'm hoping, you know, that it turns out to be a decent movie. But, you know, we'll see.
We shall see. Hey, we're going to take a break. And don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
First, he created the most frightening film ever made. Then, he took his unique vision of terror one step further. Now, George A. Romero takes us out of the night, beyond the dawn, and into the darkest day of horror the world has ever known. Day of the Dead. J. Romero's Day of the Dead, the most eagerly awaited day in horror film history.
Okay, guys, we're back for Monster Mania Radio. Don't forget, look at MonsterMania.net for our next event, which is March 8th through the 10th.
The 10th anniversary.
And, you know, we're always mentioning new guests. And please, you know what? Let me just say this. We would always appreciate if you can send people to the podcast. So when you write about how great the new guest lineup is from the podcast and someone below you asks who they announce, you know what your good response would be?
Go listen to the podcast.
That would be great. Instead of just telling everybody what who's coming. You know, it's an experience, and we want people to learn more about the convention itself. And
I think they get I would hope they get a better feel for the convention by listening to us talk about it. Listen to our views on stuff. I mean, yeah. We're not, between myself and my two sons, I mean, we're not in this, to print money. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't bring in certain guests because we don't want to charge outrageous prices for autographs. I mean,
right.
We could bring in some big names and we could make some big offers to people. But, I know that the autograph price, you had asked me about William Shatner before, we talked on did the show today. We could have had William Shatner at one point. I wanted to have him when we had the Halloween reunion because he's the face of
right. That'd
Michael
have been awesome.
Myers,
yeah.
But he wanted to charge like $70 or $80 for an autograph, and to me, that's not the business model of what Monster Mania is. I mean, I know that that kind of autograph price is a standard maybe in other big box shows. A show that's going to be at a convention center or something. But that's just not what we're about. So, and I think by listening to the podcast, you get a better idea of, the thought process behind, what the show is and how we view things. So, I hope that comes across.
There's actually a face behind the show. It's
yeah.
not just
a
committee.
Behind
yeah.
the show, yeah.
Speaking of printing money, I happened to catch the new World War Z trailer online, and I sent you the link right away once I saw it, and I wanted to get your opinion.
And my opinion was, why do they have the Transformer music in the background?
That was the first thing you said, yes. If you had, now, you said you've never read World War Z.
I don't know anything about it. I saw the trailer that you sent me. I know that it's a costly film, and I know they're expecting it to be some kind of a blockbuster. To me, it's starting to sound like Ishtar, the movie that they had put so much money in, and then when it came out, it just totally fizzled. So I'm hoping that it's not the case.
World War Z, the book, is written by Max Brooks, and it's kind of like...
Max Brooks being Mel Brooks'
son.
Son?
Yeah. And it's actually like a retelling of stories from survivors of the zombie apocalypse. And when I read it, and then I found out they were making a movie, to myself, I thought... I mean, I don't know how well it would come across on film. Now I see the trailer, and it really has nothing to do with the book besides really the name. And I think the premise is for the movie is that Brad Pitt's the main character, and he's trying to search the globe for information that can stop the zombie outbreak.
Am I wrong in saying this? Because you've read the books, I haven't. I only know what I know of it from quick horror news things that I've seen in the mm-hmm. trailer. Is it fair to say that the movie's been transformerized into... the books have been transformerized into this type of version of a movie? Or
Like Michael Bade?
Yeah. No, Michael... Yeah. Has it been Bade up or no?
I'm going to tell you right now, from looking at the trailer, it's got blockbuster written on it. I don't want to say money-wise, but investment-wise. Their original production... cost, like their budget cap was $125 million. They now are at $200 million, and they're still, I believe, still not finished. There were scenes that they wanted to have Brad Pitt in Philadelphia, but instead of having him in Philadelphia, they like flew everyone to Scotland and made Scotland look like Philadelphia. Like, why not just film in Philadelphia? I'm sure Philadelphia would have went crazy for that.
And a lot of movies are filmed in Philadelphia.
Yeah, lots.
I mean, there's a lot of Philadelphia has gone out of its way to offer tax breaks.
Yes.
To filmmakers to come here. So, I don't know how cheap it was to fly everyone out to Scotland and make Scotland look like
imagine.
Philadelphia, but to me, it doesn't really make.
They've
a whole
gone
lot
through
of
like
sense.
Four writers and. My initial instinct from watching the trailer, the one thing I really do like is there's like the zombies don't, first of all, they don't look like zombies. They look more like 28 Days Later type of rage.
Oh, okay.
characters. Like, you know, they're not shambling. They're insane.
So they look like people that bought the Michael Myers mask with the dog face, and they've just had it.
They've had
it. And they're storming the factory.
The one thing I do like is, it's weird that I only like one thing from the trailer, is that there's almost like a wave of zombies.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it looks cool. Like, to me, that looks cool. Will I go see it?
Yeah, you will.
I probably will. I'm curious. I mean,
the question is, will I go see it?
That is a good question. Will you?
I don't know.
So will you wait and hear what I have to say? Because you know I'm going to be honest. And I'm either going to say I like it or I don't.
No, because you have bad taste in movies.
Don't email you and ask for Brad Pitt. Because I'm sure Brad Pitt's not coming to Monster Mania.
Dude, as soon as we air this podcast, I'll get like 3 emails. Do you have Brad Pitt? Some of the fans are like, just, they have my dry sense of humor. So... I'm expecting those Brad Pitt requests as we speak.
I mean, I think it doesn't look anything like the book. So if you're thinking that it's going to be like that,
I'm sure Max Brooks doesn't care.
No, he's getting a fat check.
Yeah, exactly.
Fat check. Let me tell you about Max Brooks. Max Brooks, for those that don't know, he teaches at a university in California how to survive zombie apocalypse or zombie survival 101.
So he's a genius. Because he's come up with a way to make money teaching something that doesn't exist.
Yes.
And how to prevent something that doesn't exist.
That's never going to happen.
From happening.
Yes.
Wow.
Imagine. Are you jealous?
No, I'm not jealous because, I tip my hat off to him for his ingenuity and his cleverness.
Yeah.
But at the same time, no, I'm not jealous. I'd rather make money.
He's the ultimate snake oil salesman.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's, you know. It works.
I mean, obviously. maybe people get survival skills out of it. Yeah. I mean, but in a classroom, how do you get survival skills? He's giving you. I mean, if you read his books, I mean, he gave you all the tools already. Like, you already know, like, to knock down your stairs so you can be safe upstairs. You already know how much water you have to be in order to be safe because zombies can walk underwater. You already know all this. So, I mean, I'm not telling you don't take his class. Take his class. But
he's a genius. He is a genius. I mean. Literally, what I just said is true. He's teaching a class on how to avoid something that is never going to happen.
Yeah.
That you never have to worry about avoiding. And he's doing it. You know what I mean? Like, people are signing up for it.
I'm telling you, man,
20 years from now, people are going to look back, and this is like the era of the zombie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Without any doubt whatsoever. You know, this is the era of the zombie, which takes us to... what I wanted to talk about.
Yes. Great segue, by the way.
There you go. Look at that.
Professional, sir.
It was announced yesterday that Rick Baker is going to receive a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
All right.
It's going to happen November 30th at 11:30 a.m. at Hollywood Boulevard in front of the Guinness Book of World Records Museum. And they went on to say, "We are proud to honor those who have successfully helped make Hollywood what it is today, with their talent and magical creations that fans have enjoyed since the beginning of the motion picture industry. Rick Baker is a revered artist who we are proud to say started his extraordinary career in California, home of the movies," stated Anna Martinez, who was the producer of the Walk of Fame ceremonies. Rick's been awarded, he's also going to enter into the Guinness Book of World Records twice, one for the most Oscar wins and also for the most Oscar nominations for Best Achievement in Makeup. So that, I mean, and it's respectable. Baker, I certainly appreciate his work. Probably his greatest piece of makeup was the whole werewolf changing scene in American Werewolf in London.
Groundbreaking.
Like, that was just absolutely groundbreaking, like you said. And he comes from like my era of people. Like, he grew up with Famous Monsters magazine and Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits. He got his first job at 18. Working on, remember the television series Davy and Goliath?
Yeah.
And Gumby? He was an animator.
Hey, Davy.
Yeah. He was an animator for them, you know, back when he was like 17 or 18 years old. Wow. And he wrote a letter to Dick Smith. And Dick invited him out to his studio. And then Dick took him under his wing and, you know.
He also was in the documentary part before Bride of Frankenstein and Frankenstein in the theater that I just went and saw.
Right.
He was one of the guests with Boris's daughter.
Sarah Karloff and Bela Lugosi Jr.
Jr., yes.
Right. So, I mean, I think it's great that someone who's made his living in horror films is getting a Walk of Fame star.
Mm-hmm.
But it made me think back to, was it last week's podcast or the week before, where the bit of news was that the Hollywood Walk of Fame powers that be basically crapped all over the idea of giving George Romero a star.
Mm-hmm.
And I, at first I thought, well, you know, Rick Baker's been nominated for a couple, you know, numerous Oscars, and he's won, you know, a lot. Maybe they turned down George Romero because he's, you know, I guess you could say, even though I think Night of the Living Dead is like a pivotal movie in horror film.
Sure.
I mean, maybe you could say that that was his one and only, what you might consider a significant film, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe that's why they wouldn't let him be in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. But when I saw that Rick Baker is getting the stars, it really made me wonder, you know, like, what's the difference? Like, why not Romero? Like, why not even consider it? So then I figured, well, let me take a look at the Hollywood Walk of Fame list of stars and see who they deem is worthy of getting a star and try to figure out the criteria that those people would meet that George Romero wouldn't meet. Because I think Night of the Living Dead, say what you want about any of his other work, Night of the Living Dead is such an important film, not only in horror film history, but in film history,
mm-hmm.
that it warrants George getting a star. That's my opinion. So then I went and looked up some names. Let me read some names to you. Here's some names just from, I'm on Wikipedia's list of stars on Hollywood Walk of Fame. Just under A. First name I see, Bud Abbott. Totally agree. Abbott and Costello.
I can see that, absolutely. Pioneer in comedy, no doubt.
Dude, second name I see, Paula Abdul.
Hmm.
For recording.
Okay.
Bryan Adams.
For music.
Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Again, I mean, instrumental in 80s music, like, to a point, but they're not.
Christina Aguilera.
Wow.
The rock group Alabama.
Okay.
Here's the one that friggin' sent me over the roof. Buzz Aldrin. The guy that walked on the moon. He's on for television.
What was he on?
When he walked on the moon.
Oh, for that?
And it was on TV.
Oh.
Now, wow. You're going to tell me that somebody who's made his career as a movie director.
Yes.
For, what are we going on, 40, 50 years now?
Yeah, yeah.
And who made Night of the Living Dead, you won't even consider giving him a Walk of Fame
with
star?
20 or 30, whatever, what is it, 20,000 or 30,000 names that were signed to
a
petition?
Yeah.
I don't know, dude. That's
you won't consider him, but Buzz Aldrin gets a star? I mean, it's great that he walked on the moon. I watched it. I think it's wonderful. If there was a NASA Hollywood, if there was a NASA Walk of Fame, and they put a star on that, or a little moon, he deserves it.
But should Paula Abdul be on the NASA? That's
what
I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I'm saying?
I mean, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man. And I mean,
That's just an A's.
That's just the A's. For the hell of it, let's go to the B's. All right, first name I see in the B's, Lauren Bacall. Totally agree.
I agree with that.
Kevin Bacon. Totally agree. Here's where we start to go off a little bit. Jim Backus,
he was from the Gilligan's Island.
Right.
Yeah.
I liked Gilligan's Island.
Is he Mr. Magoo, too?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Here you go. Bob Barker. My man.
That's you.
My son texted or tweeted me the other day after he listened to the podcast, Yo, Bob Barker. Boys to Men.
Hey, Philadelphia Zone, baby.
There you go.
I mean, they won awards. I think that musically, when you talk about the people that are in music, they have won music awards. Is it because George Romero's never won an award that would be recognized by those people? I mean, is that really what you think the criteria is, that you have to be recognized for a Grammy or something like, you know, something along those lines?
Big Bird. Big Bird's not even a real person.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird.
According to Romney, he shouldn't even be in existence. But, I mean, you know, I could go through the list, and it's fascinating, to be honest with you. But I don't know. I don't know what the criteria is. But all I know is, based on... I mean, I thought the Hollywood Walk of Fame should really be people related to movies. I mean, that's when I think of Hollywood, that's what I think of. I think there should be a whole other Walk of Fame for music people, but I mean, I'm not going to tell them how to run their business.
Well, they have their music Hall of Fame that they already have that
right.
they still won't
it's
put
horrible.
Kiss in. I don't understand. Well, come on, dude. I mean, they were a big name. I don't know why they wouldn't put them in. But anyway, that's I see what you're saying, and it is. I think that we're on the outside looking in. A majority of our people, of the horror genre people, are never going to be looked at that way. We just aren't. You could, I mean, John Carpenter, I don't believe, has a star. Stan Winston does. So Stan Winston, another guy that did special effects.
Right. Apparently the special effects makeup guys, they get consideration. And in all honesty, I'm surprised they do when directors don't. I would think, and I don't know whether, you know, I'm skewed in my thinking, but I would think that directors would be regarded higher than makeup people. Not because they're, you know, one job is better than the other, but I mean, just the director is the person that's really in charge of the film. I would think those people kind of, especially in a group of people or in an establishment that's recognizing achievement, you know, for a film, I would think that directors would rank a little bit higher than makeup, as they would rank higher than soundtrack musicians mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I mean, like, the director is the helm of the, you know, the person in charge of the whole
thing. His vision.
And the other people basically work for the director.
Sure.
You know, in one form or another. I don't get it, though.
Let me ask you a question. Now, we're closing in on a new year. Is the genre still looked at as is it a stigmatism still to be involved with the horror genre?
Absolutely. And I totally disagree with it. I mean, honestly, Frankenstein and Dracula saved Universal. When they first came out, they made a lot of money for the company. You know, we could look it up for the year to be exact. I'm not sure exactly what year it is, but I think it was either 43, somewhere around then, that Universal was almost bankrupt.
Yeah.
And they started showing double features of Dracula and Frankenstein at the movie theaters, and it saved them from bankruptcy, mm-hmm. brought them out, and like put them way into the black. So, I mean, and you know, the Exorcist did the same thing for the movie studio. It seems to me that they feel like they're catering to the lower end of moviegoers. And there's another interesting story that I've got for you for horror news along this line. But I think they kind of disregard, you know, like it's kind of like the ugly stepchild, mm-hmm. you know, of filmdom. And but at the same time, it's made the careers of so many people.
Sure.
And it saved the studios so many times that, you know, I think it deserves a little bit more respect, you know.
Yeah, it deserves some recognition.
As does George Romero. I mean, come on. You have to recognize how important Night of the Living Dead is, in my opinion.
I agree.
Not even
100%.
Talking about his other work, but specifically for that, I think you have to. If people want to collect $30,000 to give him a star, I don't think they should be laughed at or feel like they're not wanted. I think it's terrible.
Well, I have to agree with you. I don't think it's. I don't know. It's a shame. I mean, we're never going to have... I don't think the horror genre is ever going to have a Avatar movie that's going to do $1 billion. I mean, it's possible. But, I mean, maybe that's what we need, is we need that type of movie. But are there more of everyone else than there are of horror fans? So, I don't know. I guess you can tweet us what you think at MonsterManiaCon at Rob Dimension. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, it's going to be horror news time, and we'll talk a little bit about Walking Dead, so don't go anywhere.
Mark Kendall's a regular guy.
Get me out of here!
With normal problems.
I want to, but I want it to be special.
But Mark's just discovered...
Hello, daughter.
dark and handsome.
That is one night stand.
I haven't had anything this pure since the Vienna Boys Choir hit town.
Has been around for centuries.
I'm 390 years old.
400 if you're a day.
Mark Kendall is necking.
Finally happened.
With a vampire.
Did I enjoy it?
Now, ow, he's losing his what? Girl.
Bit my lip.
His customers.
Let's get out of here!
His image.
Look, I'm not there.
And his mind.
Oh, wow, I love your outfits.
I'm not wearing a costume.
Mark's got to choose.
It's like you're not the Mark I thought I knew. You look like Jerry Lewis.
Between his first love.
I'm the owner of the pants you've been trying to get into for the last 4 years.
And his last date.
How would you like to spend eternity with me?
I can't. I gotta go to college.
Before his future goes up in smoke.
How'd you like your crotch set on fire?
Ooh, rough trade.
Nothing is sacred.
No!
In a tasty comedy.
Can I have one of those uncooked ones?
You can sink your teeth into.
How was it?
Delicious.
Once bitten.
Once bitten.
I don't want to be a vampire. I'm a day person.
Hello?
Hello.
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
Why do you want to know my name?
I want to know who I'm looking at.
Someone is playing a deadly game.
It all began with a scream over 911.
Someone who's seen one too many scary movies.
Do you like scary movies?
What's the point? They're all the same. Some stupid killer stalking some big-breasted girl who can't act, who's always running up the stairs when she should be going out the front door. It's insulting.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a scary movie.
Don't answer the phone. Don't open the door. Try to hide.
You're not scared, are you?
Scream, rated R.
Hi, and welcome back to Monster Mania Radio. This is Dave Hagen, the promoter of Monster Mania Con, sitting with Rob Dimension, the writer, director, star, musician.
No.
Makeup?
Yeah, I did some makeup.
Best grip?
A lot of times I lost my grip.
I bet you did.
No clowning around. Hey, actually, if you go to robdimension.com or noclowningaround.com, we are going to have pre-orders up this week.
Are you clowning around?
No way, man. I'm being serious. December 28th, I think, is going to be the release date. So we'll have DVDs up. And
boy, I'm busy that day. What day did you say it was?
December 28th.
The 28th?
Yeah.
Ah, jeez. I think you said December 8th. Yeah, I'm busy that day,
You're
too.
You're busy that day, too?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I hate that.
No, I saw the first rough cut, and I liked it.
And you gave me some news about it. You dropped a little news on me that kind of surprised me.
I mean, can I say it?
Sure.
Look, I mean, behind the scenes, Dave and I, we talked quite a bit, and... and I've been coming to you for advice, and I'm not afraid.
You poor bastard.
I'm not afraid to say that, and you've helped me quite a bit. So you know, there were people that donated a certain amount, and they received associate producer titles, and I added you as an associate producer.
Wow, how much do I owe you now?
It was $100.
I knew you were going to get money out of me one way.
Just get $8 out of you for the DVD, I'll be happy.
Well, so, you know, next time you come, if I see a box of Good and Plenty, you know.
So I might give you 3 associate producer credits, so then we're even for Christmas. Merry Christmas. So I know you wanted to talk a little bit about horror news.
I love that.
Do you love it?
Yeah, I love that.
You love the little...
I love the little...
Friday the 13th.
You know, it just adds that little...
Little extra. A little pizzazz.
A little pizzazz.
So what do you got?
And I liked in the last podcast where you did... When I revealed that you gave me a Len Chaney
and
autograph.
I gave you the...
Wah, wah, wah.
It was so perfect. It was a Price is Right sound effect. And you've become the Bob Barker of horror podcasts.
Don't forget to spay and neuter your pets.
Yeah, right? Oh, boy, I tell you.
We joke about it, but it is something I totally you know, animals. I grew up Catholic, and we had to pick our confirmation name, and you get to pick any name you could pick. I picked Francis for St. Francis of Assisi, of Assisi, because, you know, he was with the animals and all that kind of stuff, and it's just something that's...
You've been an animal lover.
Yeah, I think I heard it from my mom. Yeah, I always talk about my dad with things, although my dad did too, but I think it's something I inherited from my mom, and, you know, it's... I'm thrilled to death that we can do the Yorkie auction every show. I mean, the first show I tried to come up with a charity, and we came up with I tried to approach the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and they wanted a guarantee that we were going to give them $5,000 or I couldn't use the name. So I was like, well, I can't guarantee that. You know, right. I don't know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that we're doing something, like we're giving something back, you know, to the Yorkie auction, which is really a really fun thing, which...
Absolutely.
You know, much thanks to you for hosting that.
I love it. I love everyone involved. I have a good time. It's I am an animal lover as well. I mean, we just took in, I think in the past 6 months, we've now basically taken in two new animals. We take in.
Where do you put the giraffes?
You just hit me the other day with like, I'm bringing something over.
I forgot what it was. A monkey or something. Yeah.
I was like, forget it. We have two cats now and four dogs, and we have a house full, and I have two kids and a wife, and it's a madhouse. Well, so anyway, let's talk about... We've totally gone off track.
Yeah, veered off.
But that's all right. So what do you have for horror news this week?
Well, for horror news, going back to what we were talking about how are horror films considered by the film industry and their fans. Okay, distributor Wild Bunch blamed Paranormal Activity 4 for more than a handful of despicable, disrespectful, ignorant, and disgusting theater goers. The translation is, and a quote from them, some rooms, by rooms they mean theaters, last weekend have experienced some problems with the spectators of Paranormal Activity 4. Confectionery counters were looted, cashiers were insulted, urinating on seats, etc. Thus, more than 40 confirmed theaters have had the showing of the movie Sinister pulled because of the actions of Paranormal Activity 4.
Stop showing turd
movies. Exactly. My point, exactly.
People show Paranormal Activity 4 and people pee on the seats. Apparently, they're not happy.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. So, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. But now Sinister's not being shown, you know, because of that. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
So actually hurts. It hurts the company.
Yeah.
That
so it's another reason to hate the Paranormal Activity film series, as if we needed any more reasons.
Oh, wow.
Now,
that is... completely insane.
Also in horror news, Texas Chainsaw 3D is going to arrive in theaters January 4th, 2013. We've already seen...
in all his geriatric glory.
Yeah, we've already seen the poster of Leatherface with the pants up to his nipples, looking like he's going to invade the Early Bird special in Florida. but here's what I like about it. The producer said they're going to ignore all the films that were made after the first one. They're ignoring the sequels that came out in 86 and 90 and 94, and they're ignoring the Platinum Dooms produced series.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically picking up the story a few hours.
A few hours?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Going back to what I said about what I liked about Halloween 2.
Same night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a few hours after... Marilyn Burns escapes on the truck.
Sally, yep.
Yep. So it goes, I guess they go to get arrested, and then it jumps into the future a little bit, and you find out that a young woman inherited the house, and that she didn't realize Leatherface, the information for the promo comes out and says she gained an inheritance but does not know that Leatherface comes with the deal. But they went to great extremes to reproduce the house from the original movie.
Oh, wow.
Which
okay.
I think is really, really cool.
For those that don't know, I believe it's... I don't know if it's still open or not, but it was a restaurant.
Yeah, it did become a restaurant. But I don't know if it's still open or not.
I think it just closed not too long ago, actually. That's a shame.
But also the original cast members, Gunnar Hansen, Marilyn Burns, and John Dugan are in it, as is Bill Moseley, who was in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Here's what I don't like about it.
Uh-oh.
Besides the poster, they released some photos from the film showing off their stars Trey Songs, song spelled S-O-N-G-Z, and Tanya Raymond. Songs is better known for his singing career. Maybe you know the songs Say Ah or Bottoms Up, and then it said, or maybe not. Meanwhile, Raymond has starred on Lost and MTV's Death Valley series. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a pet peeve of mine, and we've talked about it off air, I think. It annoys the hell out of me when films add pop stars or music stars to a film that have no acting experience.
That was a Battleship is a good example. They had Rihanna.
It's all the time, dude. I mean, in horror films, Paris Hilton in House of Wax. Busta Rhymes in our favorite, Halloween Resurrection.
Worst one.
Sticky Fingers was the Blade character in the Blade television show. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I guess they think they're going to pick up additional ticket sales because they add these people into these films. Mm-hmm. But to me, it ruins it. I mean, it absolutely ruins it. I hated Halloween Resurrection.
So would you rather see an unknown actor?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'd rather see an unknown good actor than a known pop star trying to be an actor.
I don't even know his songs, to be honest. I mean,
I never heard of them either. But, I mean, it just, you know, the photo they showed you, it was a promo photo to help, you know, build interest in the movie, which dashed interest in the movie for me. He's running around with his shirt off, you know, and, you know, whatever his name is again, Songs, Trey Songs. Like, I mean, to me.
You've checked out already.
That's the red flag, man. Yeah. That's the red flag. If you got to do that to sell your movie, then you're just, you know, you're throwing darts on the wall. You know, like you're trying to hit everything. I had a lot of hope for it because they did go to great pains to reproduce the original house. You know, like for the set and everything. I'm still hopeful, but I mean, to me, that's a red flag. I hated Busta Rhymes in Halloween Resurrection. Absolutely hated it. And he was slated to be in the sequel, but Resurrection did so poorly that they decided not to do a sequel and they did H2O instead.
Thank God. Do you know, first of all, if it's being shot in 3D?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if it's being shot in 3D. Or if it's going to have the 3D added afterwards. I'll have to find that out.
I'm going to guess the latter.
I'm afraid that it's the latter. I'm hoping for the former, but I'm afraid it's the latter.
Yeah.
I had just gotten the new Spider-Man movie.
Oh, yeah?
From Marvel.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Good?
It came out in 3D. It's okay. What I liked about it is that it stuck more to the original comic book series, Gwen Stacy's his girlfriend instead of Mary Jane.
Mm-hmm.
Flash Thompson's in it. Flash Thompson's great. Yeah, you know, if you read the original comics, you know, this version of Flash Thompson really sticks much closer to the original comics. I really liked it as far as that stuff goes. The 3D, I'm going to say that it was added in afterwards because after watching Creature from the Black Lagoon in 3D, which was shot in 3D, and watching that on my 3D TV, I was thrilled to death. When I put Spider-Man in, which I thought was shot 3D, and I don't know that it wasn't, judging by what I've seen on a 3D TV, I think it was added in post. And don't even do it if you're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I don't think it's, you know, it's because people pay the extra money to go to IMAX and the extra money for an IMAX in 3D. And if it's not really going to be beneficial, then why?
Right, exactly. It's like painting a dog nose on a Michael Myers mask. You know what
you
I mean?
You're
like,
not letting that go.
No, I'm not letting that go. Dude, I'm mad for you.
Thank you.
And also, the last thing I have for horror news is the Evil Dead remake trailer is out. Have you seen that?
I only saw it when it was like a bootleg version that someone took at the New York Comic Con. I mean, it looks, it doesn't look like Evil Dead. It looks good. But it doesn't look like Evil Dead.
Well, that's what a lot of people are raving over this, and which surprised me. I mean, I thought Evil Dead would have this following that would absolutely crap all over any kind of new version of an Evil Dead.
But especially without Ash.
Yeah,
Ash is not in it.
Well, although the Ash character's not in it, I didn't know that.
I don't think so, unless
there's a guy that kind of looks like him in the quick trailer.
The girl is the main character, from what I understand.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, that's what I understand.
Oh, you do see the girl, you know, you're assuming she's cutting off her hand.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's the case. But I'm still on the fence about it. The fans seem to love it. Mm-hmm. You know, all the comments I've seen have been overwhelmingly, you know, ecstatic over it, which kind of surprised me. Like, I'm surprised that they wouldn't look at this as a remake as they look at other things. But, you know, maybe they're onto something. Maybe it is going to be good.
Maybe. I know that from what I understand, it's already going to have problems with getting an R rating. So they're going to have to cut some stuff out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I guess it's extremely gory, from what I understand.
Now,
extremely.
Do you know what Sam Raimi's involvement in this is?
Or? As far as I know, I mean, from what I had read, I don't think anything. It's written by the girl that did Juno. I can't think of her name off the top of my head. But so she's the one that actually was the main person behind it. But, I mean, it could have changed. I haven't looked into it in quite a while as far as details. I just, when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, it looks pretty good. I mean, again, we're in the same boat again where... Why are we naming these movies or these TV shows after already known titles only to be looked at and judged at more harshly? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, why make an Evil Dead if you're... Like, Evil Dead is what it is because of Raimi and Bruce Campbell.
Right.
Okay? So you take those two out of the equation. You take the Ash character out of the equation because... Part one is basically a remake of part two. I mean, part two
is a remake of part one. Yeah.
So if you're going to change it and you're going to add a lot of different stuff, I mean, I don't understand why to call it Evil Dead again.
Well, I don't know how much they added to it. I mean, from what I did see, a lot of it from the trailer, a lot of it is the same as the first one. They show you the woods, basically, the vines or the
twigs and stuff. The chick in the basement.
You know, attacking the girl, which was, you know, pretty graphic in the original one.
Yeah, back then, yeah.
You know, they show him reading the Book of the Dead. The girl in the basement, like you said. I mean, I think there might be enough of it that does follow through. I'll go see it for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of the first Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the Evil Dead series got, as they went on, I liked them less. Although I did like 2 a lot. 2 was basically, like you said, a remake of 1. Army of Darkness lost me.
I mean, really?
Yeah, it did. I mean, it was too much Three Stooges.
I do like it, but I mean, I see where it made that jump. But I do like... I like 2 and 3 more than I like 1.
Yeah.
Like 1 is very gritty.
Oh, really? That's what I like about it.
Yeah, it's you can tell, like, you know, that they didn't have a lot. And I like 2 is to me, that is the staple in that series.
Yeah.
It's really well done. It's, I mean, they had a budget better, or a better budget. You know, 3 for me, Army of Darkness, when I first saw it, I didn't really care for it. And then I've seen it countless times, and I am a bigger fan of it, maybe because it is a little bit more... I think if you look at maybe the time that it came out, maybe that's the direction that maybe the genre was kind of in, like the silly, there wasn't a lot going on at the time. I don't know, I'd have to look at the exact date, but it just kind of fit in that mold at the time, and Bruce Campbell was able to pull it off, so I don't know. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I just felt... you know, I don't know if this is fair to say, but I kind of felt like it betrayed its horror roots.
Mm-hmm. Literally. I think that is fair to say.
I was hoping if they ever did do an Evil Dead 4, that it would go much more to the, you know, to the flair of the original one. Uh-huh. You know, which was, you know, again, what we had talked about, Cabin in the Woods.
Yes.
I really liked the first half of that movie.
Right.
Second
half, it's in left field.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't, you know, I have not gone back and revisited it, and I don't know if I will.
I would, but I would only do so for the first half, and I know I would start to tune it out once it makes that jump.
All right, so speaking of jumping, let's talk, do you have anything else for horror news?
Nope.
All right, let's talk about The Walking Dead.
Yes.
Now, we must tell everyone again that the Walking Dead conversation, we will be talking a little bit about what happened, so there will be spoilers. Don't fast forward too far because we do have an announcement, another guest announcement.
For August.
Yes. So I look forward to that. So this week on Walking Dead, I actually enjoyed the episode because it gave us a little bit of a breather.
So, you say that, but to me, this is like, this is where it took the jump. Like, I loved this episode. It may be my favorite episode. It really brings a lot of elements of the comic book into the show. And like I had said to you before we recorded this today, I mean, I could make some calls and get, you know, scripts or plot outlines or whatever sent to me, you know, ahead of time. I don't want to know. Like, I want to watch it. Sunday has regained its 9 o'clock special time for the show of the week. Mm-hmm. You know, what I had said earlier, a few years ago, it was The Sopranos. 9 o'clock, Sopranos, HBO.
Great show.
It was the thing to watch.
Yeah.
You know, and it was the water cooler show everybody was talking about the next day.
Yeah.
Man, The Walking Dead has taken that time slot and done the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's people in my job in retail. Almost everyone watches it. And I'm shocked, to be honest with you. I mean, I thought it was... When I say us as a group, I mean horror fans as a group. You know, I thought it was like our show. But
do you think it's broadening the horizon?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely it is. And what I really liked about the show, I had said last week, I can't wait till, you know, there's a lot of things, if they follow the comic, there's a lot of things that's going to go on with Rick that's going to be very interesting. I said it's going to start with the telephone. And man.
This week?
When the phone rang at the end of, I'm telling you. I almost had to clean up after myself. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't be happier. This season is going to be phenomenal. I can't wait. I find myself at the end of every episode, man, I can't wait to see the next episode. And with this one, with the governor's daughter,
yes,
from the comic books. It started with the end of the. It started with the week before with. When he had the aquariums or the water tanks filled with all the heads.
Yes.
That was from the comics. Yeah. I mean, they're really bringing in some of the most memorable parts of the comics and putting them in a television show. This phone thing, man, it's going to last a while, and it's phenomenal. And there was that time, I mean, you could see when, you know, when Rick went back in and he's just axing all the zombies and stuff in there. When Glenn comes in, and like Glenn's representing normalcy, or at least what they have is normalcy, and he just pushes him away, doesn't want anything to do with it. And you know, we said we tweet while we're watching it. I tweeted he's got that Jack Torrance look in his eye.
Perfect example.
Yeah. I mean, Rick has gone on. He's a whole different character, man. And it's, you know, and it's following the comic. I mean, I'm thrilled to death. What did you think of the whole episode?
I mean, I really liked it. What I found the most appealing to the episode is it created a new layer for the characters. It made the characters, like the comic, extremely likable. You see a different side to Daryl where he's holding the baby. And, you know, they're going out and get... The one thing that kind of bothered me, why would you not get baby formula before? Like, why would we wait until the baby's born? That's a sign.
Good point.
You know, I don't know. Like, she wasn't just pregnant, right? And it makes the group, now it's almost separating the group a little bit with Rick on the outside and everyone else very close knit. And it's not on purpose. It's just because he's so far out there that you can't even. I don't know what it's going to take to bring him back. Like, you're assuming that he's going to come back to be a leader for the group.
Right.
But the group is almost on their own right now.
Well, what's the group thinking watching their leader? I mean, you know, I mean, they knew when he was on the outside and, like you had commented, I mean, great acting, man. The episode before, you know, when he's going through the remorse and, you know, everything sinking in. But when he enters back into the prison and just starts... doing, you know, the Shining impersonation, and Glenn goes in and he physically takes Glenn and throws him against the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, Glenn is seeing, you know, just how deep into the madness he's gone. You know, like when he comes out of the prison, is he going to be is he going to be more calmed down? I think the phone call that happens at the end of the episode, you know, not to ruin it for people, but if you've read the comic, you know who's on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was at the point where he was just going to completely lose it, and part of his mind made the phone call thing happen.
Yeah.
So that it's him, it's part of him trying to save the rest of himself.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to do it through the advice.
It's almost therapy.
That he's getting from the phone.
Yeah.
I mean, but wow, man.
Yeah.
I couldn't be happier. By far my favorite episode so far this year.
And also we do not know what's going on with Carol. They're assuming she's dead.
Well, they're digging three graves.
Right.
So...
And Daryl puts down the rose that would be, I would assume, for her.
That's what I thought, too.
So, I mean, again, we're thinking that, is she going to be in the same boat as her daughter was? Are we going to find her six episodes down the line in someone's barn? Is this going to happen?
Well, that's what I had said in work. We were talking about it. And I had said, you know, like, is it going to turn out that she's going to walk out of the prison like her daughter walked out of the barn,
right,
and they're going to have to kill her?
Right.
You know, like, why are they digging that grave? Are they
digging that grave? Is Daryl going to be the one that has to do it?
Right.
You know, he's the one that's bonded, it seems like, the most with her.
And
so.
Rick is obviously, you know, in his own insane world right now.
And I think what was important about this episode is it again puts a good focus on the governor and also shows that this guy was a family man. He has his daughter still, you know, that she's still a zombie. Well, she's a zombie now or a walker. And he's, you know, brushing her hair and telling her, you know, I love you and stuff and making sure she can't bite. Another part that I did like, though, was the staged fighting. I don't know if I like the reason, because the reason that the governor said was for them not to be afraid of walkers, for them not to fear walkers. I think that's false sense of security.
Well, do you think that's really their reason, or is that what
he
telling
just told Andrea?
Andrea,
well, it's possible.
I think it's, you know, hey, I want
to
get
to
your
me,
bands.
It looks like a form of entertainment that you would see in.
But it's fixed. It ruined it for me.
It's like Land of the Dead.
Yeah,
you know where
yeah,
they
exactly.
have where they
yeah.
have that's
they got Simon Pegg and they
right.
made him into
yep.
yeah.
It's similar to that, is what it looked like to me. I mean, I do see that they take the teeth out and stuff like that, which is cool. And it, again, makes Merle look like a BA, where he's like the tough guy.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of think that... I don't really know what that segment of the show showed, besides the fact that it was kind of cool.
I think it was a social commentary on mankind, that at some point, mankind is just going to find, you know, entertainment... You know, and I mean, and it harkens back, you know, again to Night of the Living Dead at the end when they're just, you know, stringing people up and, you know,
yeah.
they're still alive. I mean, you know, they're having fun with the, you know, at the
corpses,
expense of the,
right.
of the Walking Dead. You
yeah.
know?
I thought you were going to say it was a social commentary on even after the apocalypse happens, wrestling's still fake.
Wrestling's fake?
Well, rumor has it. I mean,
well, that's what I you know, going back to that, that's what I tweeted. Oh my god, you know, the zombie fights are rigged. Thank god wrestling's still, you know,
so if you like, maybe what we should do is we should start grading these episodes like A to D or A to F. What would you grade this episode?
For me, A plus. Like I said, absolutely my favorite episode of the season. Possibly my favorite episode of the series completely, and mainly because it really gave me hope. I mean, one of the reasons I'm so into the television show is because I was really into the comic book,
yeah.
you know, that my oldest son got me into very early on, and I love the comic book. I still get it. You know, I just got an email. Issue number 104 is getting mailed to me, and this. In the comic book, I think the prison series section or segment, whatever you want to say, the prison time period was the best of the comic.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel that it's going to be the best of the television show.
Mm-hmm.
I was thrilled to death to see so many nods to what's in the comics brought onto the screen. And it's only going to get better.
Again, Dave and myself, we both encourage anyone, if you have not read the comic, to buy the comic. The comic is available in a hardback, hardcover, trade paper. There's a trade paperback also. I mean, we're talking, you get like 5 issues in every trade, and it's like, I don't know, $12 or $15. Yeah. It's well worth it. And you can start at the beginning, and you'll see where it veers off, because the second season's where it really veered off, and now they're bringing it back, because I felt like in the beginning, except for the last 3 episodes, which I actually, I couldn't stand, which made me on the fence if I was going to watch the second season. The second,
yeah, really?
Oh, dude, when they go to Georgia, and they're at that...
The Center for Disease Control.
I couldn't stand it. It was awful. It was awful. It wasn't needed.
Yogi didn't like it either.
Yeah, he didn't. It wasn't needed. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it totally... It seemed like a movie I would see on Sci-Fi.
Huh. See, what I got from that is you found out everyone was infected. I mean, that was the purpose of that.
I mean, yeah, I can see that that's the way for them to convey that message, but they could have left them wondering. We still don't know enough about it where it justifies that 3-episode story arc for that.
Don't you think in most good zombie movies, going back to Night of the Living Dead, what makes everything so... interesting, just as what makes Michael Myers interesting in the original Halloween, is that you don't know what brought it on.
Right.
You know, like you don't know why Michael Myers is... That was what made John Carpenter's Halloween so exciting for me, and what I didn't like about Rob Zombie's Halloween. I want it to be the mystery. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't want to know what caused these people in the Walking Dead to become zombies.
So don't you think that they could have done without that three episodes?
No. I guess they could have, but it didn't bother me. You know,
really had me on. The second season was so dramatic and less horror based. I really enjoyed it. I watch it for the drama. I mean, I like the gore and stuff too, but it's... I mean, people have to understand that the Walking Dead are the survivors. They're not the zombies. I mean, that's the truth. You know, that's really what it is. So it is much like Day of the Dead, if you want to refer to George Romero, where it's a story about the people. It's the same. You're in the same boat here, as it's a story about the people and how they have a social breakdown and how they deal with it. Mm-hmm. And it brings all forms of life into one group. So what happens? I mean, now they have prisoners involved. We still don't know what those prisoners did.
Right.
So, I mean, they could be murderers, or they could be there for tax evasion. We have no idea. So,
well, the one, Axel, you know, basically says he's there because he dabbled in chemicals. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, you know, and currently, you know, in some states you can smoke marijuana, in other states you can do 30 years for having the same amount of marijuana that the person in the other state has. Yeah. So, you know, it's some... crazy stuff, but I just think it's... I love the series. I think it's just getting better and better and better. This episode really made me, you know, very hopeful that we're going to see a lot of the elements that we liked in the comics, you know, on the television screen, and that's phenomenal. And it made Sunday night in front of the television at 9:00 the place to be again.
Again, we want to hear from you. We're hoping that you guys will join in with us on Sunday nights. We'll live tweet at Monster Mania Con at Rob Dimension, and we're always full of jokes. We don't really spoil it. We have lots of jokes. At least we try. Hey, don't go anywhere, because when we come back, I want to find out what you're thankful for, and then I want to find out who the guest is for August.
Okay.
All right, so don't go anywhere.
I have seen the future of horror. His name is Clive Barker. Imagine a nightmare.
No.
Unlike anything you have witnessed. Is born. Because within these walls, the unholy is unleashed.
Tear your soul apart.
5 years ago, Stephen King and George Romero, two masters of the macabre, created their hallmark of horror, Creepshow. Many would argue that nothing of significance has happened since. Until now. Maybe you don't get out much.
Oh, this is crazy. This is totally crazy.
Maybe you're always running late.
I gotta go.
Or maybe you just have other things on your mind.
They gotta make me a movie star.
But if you only make it to one scary film all year, make it one you remember all year long. Creepshow 2. You like movies that will keep you stuck to your chair. Stephen King and George Romero have conjured up an all-new Creepshow.
No! Is it possible?
Just for you.
I mean, what is it?
I don't know.
So don't just sit there.
I'm gonna swim for it right now.
Walk. Run. No! Swim if you have to.
I've got you!
But whatever you do, don't take your time. Because the scares come twice as quickly in...
I be you!
Creepshow 2.
Okay, guys, we're back from...
You know, we should record
the commercial breaks.
Yeah, we should, man.
I was commenting about how I was flipping around the channels and I saw a Finding Bigfoot commercial, which it baffles me that there, you know, the guy's like, you know, there's something on the infrared and they show this picture and it's got like a blur with like, I guess if you tell me what it is, I can kind of see it. Like you see the squatch, they call them squatches. Do you see the squatch holding the baby? I'm like, I kind of see it. And then the guy's like, you know, he's like, they're all around us. And I'm just like, dude, like, really? So I just
see, said, so going back to the Max Brooks thing, what we need to do then is to come up with a program at a local college, maybe University of Pennsylvania, you know, like a nice little Ivy League school. So, you know, how to survive
squatch
a
survival.
Sasquatch attack. Yeah.
Squatch survival.
There you go.
But I told you that the girls that would attend, if we were looking for the females that would come in the door, are going to look like Bigfoots. There's no way that you're going to get a hottie that's interested in Bigfoot. But
you never know.
The fact that this show is on like three seasons and we still have any proof.
Oh, it's a regular show?
Dude, yes. It's like a weekly show that's on like, I don't know what channel it's on. I'd have to look. But I came.
Dude, I am so glad that I do not watch regular television.
I'm baffled.
I didn't know that. I mean, I see these things, these porn shows. They always annoy me because somebody's bringing in like George Washington's autograph, and the guy behind the counter is saying, "Oh, it's gonna be tough to sell that. I'll give you $5 for it." And then they give the guy $5 because they tell him how they can't make any money on it. Uh-huh. Then the guy goes away. And then the guy that sold it to him. The guy that bought it for $5 turns to the camera and says, I'm going to make a fortune on this.
Yeah, I'm going to sell for $17,000.
Yeah. Like, I would never go into those pawn shops. You know what I mean? Like, I can't.
I actually think the opposite. I think those shows give you a false sense of value. Comic Book Men's a good example. They don't do it this season, but last season, just to kind of veer off from that. They were bringing in items that, I mean, you would know or I would know what retail should be.
Right.
And they were kind of overpaying. And I think that creates a false hope for collectors of what their value is. Yeah.
Store.
Well, no, of what their valuables are worth. You can only sell, your value is only as much as someone will pay for it.
Exactly.
That's the best way to explain it. I don't care if you're using a comic book guide, pricing guide, or anything else. There's movies on Amazon where Amazon will buy these movies back from you. There's no way people are paying $200 for a DVD. There's no way. If they are, they're crazy.
Yeah.
I would never spend $200 for a DVD. Never.
No? Not even no clowning around?
Well, that's not really fair.
See, I'm putting you over here.
I see that. But, well, that's why you're an associate producer.
There you go. Oh, that's right. Do I get a big fat cigar? I'm fired at Rob Dimension.
You get a bubblegum cigar.
Yeah. I like the movie, but I hate the clown.
Come on now. But I find it weird what's on TV. And I've seen so much. I said to my kids today, I'm so
Can I get one of them chairs that say associate producer on the back?
You can.
That would be awesome.
If you buy it. I'm tired of reality TV.
And I can get you one that says clown.
I would gladly sit in it. I'm not even kidding. All right, Dave. So I want to know what you're thankful for, you know, and then we can get a little bit into Black Friday, but Thanksgiving is, it's here, man.
Yeah, man. It snuck up on us. I didn't realize, I guess it was Monday of this week that I was like, holy God, Thanksgiving's next Thursday. Like I thought it was another week away, but, as far as being thankful, I mean, God, we could do a whole podcast about the things I'm thankful for. I mean, we're doing the Monster Mania Radio podcast, so I guess I should start with, Monster Mania. I mean, it's really sincere. I mean, I always wanted to be a writer. Wanted to write novels. I've written a couple, but nothing's gotten published yet. My dream actually was to be a screenwriter and to write a Hammer film, to be honest with you. So, although that's not come to pass, you know, Monster Mania opened up doors for me that, you know, it kept me in the genre that I love. Part of the reason why I've never given up my day job is I never wanted Monster Mania to be, I never wanted to look at Monster Mania convention as a business, in that where I had to make business decisions. Like, people will say to me sometimes, you know, wow, I can't believe it's the week before the show and you're still adding guests, you know. And I do that because I want each show to be the best that it can be, you know. And I'm afraid in many ways that if Monster Mania becomes the sole means of support for me, that I'll start making business decisions rather than decisions from the heart, you know. And Monster Mania convention has always been, from the heart, you know, first and foremost. And
you might lose your passion.
Yeah, I wouldn't want it to be like, oh, I can't add that guest because that guest is going to, I'd really like to add him, but that guest is going to cost me $1,200, you know, between, or even $1,500, you know, between airfares and food per diems and hotel room and car service and all that kind of stuff. I'm thankful to Monster Mania for many different things. It every show, it brings me. It's a significant reminder of my father, which got me, took me to the horror movie theaters all the time and see all these great films and double features and stuff. I mean, it was launched on his birthday, the very first one, and it's always been a tribute to him. So I mean, it's. I'm very thankful for the opportunity to pay a tribute to him that way. I just wish he would have been able to see it. I'm thankful for it because it brings my family together. It's a business I get to do with my two sons. We're getting the grandkids, involved in it. I couldn't even put into words really what it means to me. So I guess, first and foremost, thankful for Monster Mania for the many, many different things that has provided and for the fans that, God, I'd say probably most of my personal friends now, yourself included, come from Monster Mania. It's been 10 years and it's really a huge part of my life, and it's not a business to me. It's an extension of me more than anything, and I can't even describe how thankful I am for it. Other than that, the family, that I have, and man, it's great when no matter what's going on in your life, that when you can, go watch your grandkids play football or take everybody out to the movie theater to see a 3D movie or to have the kids come over and say, hey, this is Creature from the Black Lagoon. Here's something I grew up watching. Put the 3D glasses on and watch it would pop. You know what I mean? Like, so much of that. I mean, it's just, I'm thankful for that. And I'm thankful for my health. You know, last week, 2 weeks ago, I was thinking I was going to be having my kidney taken out or something, dude. I was in tremendous pain, and I was convinced It felt like my kidney was like three times the size that it should be.
I think there's a name for that. It's called good and plentyitis.
So, you know, the doctor said, oh, I think it's this muscle. And I'm like, dude, this ain't a muscle. Like, I was really scared, to be honest. And, you know, touch wood. You know, it turned out, I think, that it's a muscle. I mean, it still bothered me, but not nearly as much, so. Lots of things to be thankful for, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm thankful for my family. I mean, first and foremost, again, my family is the ultimate for me. You know, nothing else matters. They're the nucleus, you know, the center of my universe, I guess you could say, my wife and my two kids. And, you know, and then after that, I mean, that's the obvious. I mean, after that, though, I'm thankful for the fact that I do have a little bit of a voice, even though it's not much. Within a genre that I adore. I love it. I mean, horror is my life. I mean, as much as I enjoy comedies, I still, there's a part of me, what people may not know is I'm always that person that wants to be a stand-up comedian, and I've always made it a goal to take that step, and I'm always, something else always comes up, so I don't, maybe this will be the year, this next year, that I'll take that chance. But I love this genre, and this genre to me is... from the people that I've met, from the and like I said, for people to appreciate my opinion on it, it's crazy to me.
They don't.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, those people have got the real issues. I mean, you know, and I'm thankful to, I don't want people to think that, you know, I take any involvement, even in Monster Mania, for granted. I mean, I'm thankful, you know, for it. And I mean... I'm thankful. There's a lot to be thankful for, you know. Luckily, I'm still alive, so
yeah.
You know, but I do look forward to Thanksgiving itself, because out of all the holidays throughout the year, we're usually traveling or we're going to so and so's house or doing something else. Thanksgiving has been a time now where we've started to have dinner at our house, and it's just, you know, the four of us. And I kind of like it that way. I like to be able to sit and laugh and have the experience of cooking next to the family and making sure that they like. And it's just, it's like a catering for ourselves that day. So I kind of like that. You know, I know that you work in retail. And Black Friday has gotten so far out of control.
It has, dude. It has.
To where now stores are opening up on... Grocery stores are open generally until 2 or 3 o'clock on Thanksgiving anyway. And I understand that because of last minute shopping. I get that. Because they're still out in enough time to go home to their families.
I don't even agree with that. But I think it's a real statement about our values as a society, mm-hmm. That we have... put the commercial money-making, greed, all that stuff ahead of putting a value on family time.
Yeah, because stores now are opening at 6 o'clock on Thursday to catch this.
There's some stores that don't even close on Thanksgiving. I think Kmart is one of the ones that they're open on Thanksgiving. I mean, you know, I saw this trend start to happen years ago. And I was in retail, and I actually worked at a store that one year we stayed open on Thanksgiving, and it was horrible. I think it's disrespectful from the company to its employees to expect them to have to come in on Thanksgiving. I mean, come on, man. I mean, like, can't we give people a few days a year to just do the things? I mean, you know, I hate to sound like ultra patriotic because, you know, my political views are all over the place. But, you know, I mean, I Republicans wouldn't like me or Democrats wouldn't like me, because I just think, you know, it should be most things should be an individual choice, not dictated by law. But, you know, I mean, like, the country was formed on Thanksgiving. You see that, you know, the Pilgrims, and I'm sure they ripped off the Indians that they didn't show you. But, I mean... Thanksgiving, when I was a kid, man, like, you know, I still remember, you know, the dinners with the family, and, you know, my father at the head of the table, and all that. I mean, it was our we're taking that away from families when we keep retail stores open on Thanksgiving, or we have them, you know, come in at, you know, 4 o'clock on Thanksgiving or whatever it is, you know, so that we can sell a big screen TV for half price and have people get crushed when they stampede a door. You know, I mean, I worked at Kitty City back in the Cabbage Patch days, man. I, you know, which started, I think, this trend of teasing people with merchandise that they can't get. You know, it was the first, to my knowledge, it was the first Chase toy. Mm-hmm. You know, and it started everything.
I agree with that.
And I mean, I was hit in the face. We took out a bin that had a lid on it, a wood lid on it, a big, looks like a laundry bin, like you would see in prisons, people pushing laundry in. We had Cabbage Patch dolls in it, and we went to open the lid, and people like rushed and attacked, and the lid came up and hit me right in the face. You know what I mean? And it's like, has society really gone to the extreme that we have to force families to not spend Thanksgiving together so that a company can sell whatever the item is, you know, at a cheaper price and make some money, just to, you know, and it's always a draw, you know, like the people want to come in for, you know, I think this year it's probably going to be great discounts on maybe the mini iPad or whatever it is, you know, or maybe 3D HD TVs that go on sale like super price or whatever. Yeah, you'll be pushing
that lid in that guy's face.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, come on, man. You know, like, let, you know, it goes back to they want to take Halloween away from people.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing? You know, like, are we moving towards a 24/7 365 day a week society?
They have Christmas stuff out in September.
Oh, we used to have it out in July. I used to work at Michael's. We had it out in July.
It's crazy.
I mean, I get that, believe it or not. I mean, I get that to a point. I don't mind, you know, putting out early. I mean, that's, you know, that's the way of the world now in retail. But I just think that, you know, open these sales at, you know, earlier and earlier is just, yeah, it's we're putting making money and buying gadgets and you know, buying things for ourselves ahead of what people need, family time.
Yeah,
know?
You're right.
Sitting around a dinner table like you said you're going to do, you know, with your kids. I mean, there's a lot of kids out there that don't have that.
You're right, you because know, it'd be, if their dad has to go to work, there's that empty seat that's, you know, he's not there, or the mom, or the daughter even. So it does put a little bit of a damper on it. I've only had to do that one time, and I was, most of the time I've been self-employed, but I had to do it one time where I was working third shift, and sure enough, I had to work. I had to go in at midnight on Thanksgiving. It doesn't really count, but still, where you have to plan ahead because you have to go to bed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a shame that it is where it is. So, hopefully everyone there has a great Thanksgiving. Now, we're going to get into the guest here for August. But you know what? Tweet us about what you're doing for Thanksgiving, because I'm curious. At Rob Dimension, at Monster Mania Con, let us know.
All I know is there's going to be a ball of good and plenty wherever I go.
Those poor people.
You don't have a ball at your house?
A bowl of what? Candy?
Good and plenty.
I know.
I was coming over. What time's dinner?
I'm on a diet, man. I can't.
What time's dinner?
That's
right. You switched to a health food diet, and I get up the other day, and I see you think you got food poisoning.
Legit.
So I text you, that eating healthy will kill you.
I know, right? It really does.
You're putting Tombstone Pizza in the oven, you'll be fine.
Oh, I'm a food addict. I have no problem admitting that. So hey, let's talk about March 8th through the 10th in Cherry Hill. It's gonna be Monster Mania 24, and it's the 10th anniversary.
Yes.
So we have already announced several guests, and make sure you go to MonsterManiaCon, MonsterMania.net for those announcements. Now, I know that what's the date for August now? Because you have a guest for August.
Hold on, I'll tell you.
All right,
let me go to my website.
If you can't tell, we're totally
off the cuff, man.
Yeah, we don't play
this
games.
This is ad-libbed 100%.
Yes.
So it's August 16th through the 18th?
All right.
What?
Now, that's we're going to be back
in 2013.
Yeah, we're going to be back at Cherry Hill. So Plaza. That's going to be good. So who do you have to announce as the first guest for August? I can't believe that you're already announcing a guest for August.
Well, it's our 10th anniversary next year, or this, 2013. So I kind of want to do new guests and guests that have contributed in some way or form to Monster Mania.
Mm-hmm.
And this guest I'm going to announce, he's been on our show before, a real personal favorite of mine. We're very, very honored to have back for us. Our first guest for August will be Dick Warlock, obviously the Shape from Halloween 2. I talked to Dick. I was trying to get him to do the Halloween radio podcast that we did, but we couldn't work out our times and mm-hmm. everything right. We will have Dick as a guest on a future podcast very shortly, actually. But you know, he's just one of those guys that's, you know, he's put his time in as a stunt man and just super great with the fans, and you know, it's always
great
to have.
He's the guy I'm going to ask. Did the mask?
There you go.
I want to know about the mask.
I want to know about the mask.
I want to know. At any point, was there shadow painted on the nose?
Well, when we have him call in for the podcast, we'll get into that.
I am going to.
There you go.
I plan on it. I want to know if it's. I also want to know if it's pale on the neck.
Yeah, he sold the. He had a $400 Dick Warlock shape
right,
mask.
Yeah, that was limited. That was made by an independent mask maker.
Yeah, but
it was,
I mean,
titled
that
the
was,
Warlock.
That,
it was fantastic.
That was phenomenal looking. Yeah. That's your Christmas present.
Oh, I would love that.
It's just a little. It's a little bit. It's almost one of those. it was $17.99.
It's got painted on hair. It doesn't even
have color. Nose is white.
Okay,
so it's got, you know, it has its redeeming
beggars
value.
Can't be choosers. So Dick Warlock is a great first announcement. To be totally honest with you, he's a great guy, extremely personable.
Yeah,
extremely personable.
And the list of films he's been in, you know, phenomenal. He was. You know, he doubled for Richard Dreyfuss in the cage of in the Jaws
mm-hmm.
when he's in the shark cage and attacked. Very interesting story he has about that. It almost killed him. Doubled for Kurt Russell in so many different movies, Escape from New York, and you know, super nice guy. And his wife Kat is a very friendly person, and really looking forward to seeing them again.
Awesome. So I guess that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
No, I just wanted to wish everyone a very happy Thanksgiving. Definitely spend it with your families. It's more important to spend time with your families than to wait hours in line for that next big gift. So,
unless, of course, they're buying for us.
Well, in that case, get in line now. It's always next year.
So anyway, make sure you visit MonsterMania.net. Make sure you visit MonsterManiaRadio.net. If you haven't, and if you can, and if you have the time, rate and review the show on iTunes. We'd greatly appreciate it. It's also available on Stitcher Radio. So, you know, tell your friends. And again, like I said, tell your friends to listen. Don't tell them, say, oh, who'd they announce? You know, say, oh, go listen to the podcast. It's well worth the hour plus that you're going to listen. So make sure you follow us at MonsterManiaCon, at Rob Dimension on Twitter. You can live tweet with us during The Walking Dead, which is easily my favorite show. I don't know what we're going to live tweet with after that show's done.
I don't know. I was thinking about American Horror Story, but I'm watching it this year, and I saw today that they renewed for American Horror Story 3.
I did see that, too.
This season's not making me... It doesn't have the impact that last season
I watched the
did.
First two, and I'm out.
Yeah, already?
Out. Wow. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I kind of like it, but I don't know. The aliens part tripped me out in the beginning.
Yeah, like, me too. I hate it when they blur science fiction with horror. I just want horror. You know, like, it's one of the reasons why I didn't like that, you know, the movie It. Like, at the end, it's a giant spider from outer space. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
I bought the book, and when I found out that was the end, I stopped reading the book.
Yeah.
I just don't like blurring the lines.
Yeah.
That's part of the thing I didn't like about... Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
I loved how it started out like an Evil Dead kind of movie, and then when we went to the...
It almost jumps the shark,
legitimately. Yeah, it does. It does, you know?
Where, I mean, people like it because it's original, but at the same time, other people don't like it because they're like, well,
it's original, but not original.
I do like Jessica Lange as a sexy nun.
Do you?
I'm not afraid. I went to a Catholic school. I'm not afraid to say that because the nuns I went to school with were not Jessica Lange.
Sister Bernadette, seventh grade. Sexy nun.
On that note.
Sister Bernadette, if you're out there, I still have the Who album for you. And that's a true story.
All right. So hopefully everyone has a great Thanksgiving.
Tommy the Who it was.
Okay.
I was blown away that the nun asked me if she could borrow Tommy by the Who from me. I'm like, yeah, sister.
Did I ever tell you I got in trouble in the seventh grade for writing in Catholic school a book report about Halloween too?
No.
I did.
I got in trouble. Well, I didn't get in trouble.
I made cover art and everything. They were not fans.
I did a book report for Stephen King's Salem's Lot when it first came out in paperback, probably 1976. And the guy handed my book report back to me and said, he said to me, do a book by an author that someone will recognize. Wow. Stephen King wasn't anything at that point. Father Dennis at North Catholic High School.
You're getting called out.
Name
this week.
And name, baby.
You guys have a good week, and we'll talk to you later.